Welcome back to the Tahoe Tap, everyone. Thanks, as always, for spending some of your valuable time with us, Mike Perrin and Rob Galloway, releasing yet another installment of Tahoe's number one rated podcast. Well, pretty sure it's the only podcast in Tahoe, so pretty much automatically makes us number one, right? Right, Rob?
Yeah, for sure.
Or maybe your mom said it, or you know, my cousin said it at one time. So as long as we got that quote out there somewhere, yeah. We're Tahoe's number one rated podcast. Per usual, no national politics. Updates on the wars or celebrity gossip, nope, not taking place here. We're bringing you a quick hit of the most engaging local news recently reported, plus a peek into the future as to what our Tahoe Daily Tribune and Sierra Sun journalism teams are developing for publication out there in hard copy. So pick up a copy when you see them at the grocery stores or around town. Then the bulk of our show will be spent getting to know the movers and shakers around Tahoe on a more personal or intimate level. This week, potentially the biggest mover and shaker of them all. If you factor in the pull she's got around the basin with all of her connections, this literally might be the biggest mover and shaker. It's Julie Reagan, Executive Director of the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency. More about Julie and our conversation with her in about 5 minutes after, right now, what Rob's got, the biggest news. But first, our sponsor, a word from them, it's Tahoe Regional Planning Agency. They're hopping on board to give us some support. They are a voice for Lake Tahoe. For more than 55 years, TRPA has led collaborative efforts to protect and restore the spectacular region. The agency is committed to protecting the lake while advancing affordable housing solutions, improving transportation, and achieving community revitalization and equity. Learn more and help plan Tahoe's future at trpa.gov. Take it away with the news, Rob.
All right. Well, unless you were living under a rock, the biggest news story has really been this snowstorm that we had over the weekend. And Mike, you and I, we waited to record this portion of the podcast just so we could see if all the hype was worth it heading into the weekend. And would you say over, under delivered? What do you think?
Well, I think it was right on point. I think they nailed it, the forecasters this time. Everything that was out there sort of delivered, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen like the final totals yet, but I don't think any of them, I think the biggest that I saw was 12 feet at the crests. That was anticipated up there, or at least one outlet I saw had 12 feet. I don't think we're going to get that, but the storm definitely had some heft to it. I mean, you had schools closed, you have roads closed, and I think the only one as we're recording right now that's still closed is 88 up there at the Carson Spur. I think everything else is open with chain controls. You know, one of the first, and we kind of joked about this, this was Friday that we were talking about this. This is the first time, maybe it's Thursday, that we've seen the resorts just, they flat out said, we're not going to opening because what we think is coming. And I don't think I'd ever seen that. Had you seen that before?
Once or twice when we knew a huge wind were coming, but not because of just the storm in general. But Sierra Tahoe, we're recording this Monday, March 4th, and they're on their fourth day of closure in a row.
Yeah.
So that's pretty wild to have that impact. But if you see the videos, you can justify why.
Yeah. You know, and I was looking at the Caltrans cameras this morning, the road cameras, and most of them, they were all just, it's all says unavailable. But then there was a handful that I saw, and I don't know how it happens, but they were upside down. I don't know what was working there, but a handful of them were upside down. So it had to be a doozy. But throughout the weekend, we just kept seeing more and more closures due to the storm, including last pod's guest, Doug Hartline, closing down the parade for Snowfest. And you mentioned over the weekend, Mike, they didn't even shut that thing down last year when we were getting hammered with snow.
Yeah, I know what exactly the dates were. I can't remember back that time, but I mean, they persevered last year, but some of the events they did keep on. The DJ was pumping on Sunday. You know, some they did their best. That's for sure.
We even had a snow slough, which I don't think I had ever heard that term before. That was yesterday morning, Highway 50. snow on the highway there that closed it down. But I also saw over the weekend too, it was like a drone footage of some of those big snow shooters. I don't know what their official name is, but they're the ones that, you know, have the big things turning, the gears turning in front, and it blows the snow really far off the road. But it was blowing snow on 80, but the wind was howling so bad, it was just basically pushing that snow that was going off the road back onto the road. So I don't, it was funny to see, but that had to do
Good to
it.
know it wasn't just me all weekend
Yeah.
with my
Yeah, right.
snowblower.
But I think, you know, that was that the biggest part of that was just that wind. You know, according to the Snow Lab, it looks like this storm got us back on track for normal, as far as snow levels go. I can't remember what the term is for the wetness or the moisture in the snow either, but it looks like we're pretty close to being on point there or back to normal. If you remember, Mike, I gave you the over under, the option to take the over under if we were going to end at normal, and you took the under. So we're gonna have to see how this all plays out.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
What has it been recorded and published or something?
totally. And then, you know, according to Open Snow, this my last little note here for from the storm. The big winner over the weekend was Sugar Bowl. It had 125 inches in total over the 4 days, and Boreal right on its heels at 119 inches. And Mike, you shared with me this morning the top 10 snowiest days on record from 1970 to 2023. And number one was February 3rd, 1989. That day had 52 inches. And so if we look at the reports by day over the weekend, Boreal had 40 inches recorded on March 3rd. And that would put them on number eight of that list, right ahead of the 39 and a half inches on January 7th of 1995. So looks like, and I did calculate the average amongst all of the resorts, and it was a little more than 7 feet. So on average, all of the resorts across the basin were right around 7 feet there.
Like I
Any other
said, I would have been
thoughts?
happy with five, anywhere from 5 to 12 is what they're saying. So we've been happy with five, but 7 at the resorts, I love it.
And so one other note, one of the bigger stories on the North Shore over the past week has been what's happening at the Boatworks Mall in Tahoe City. And the vision from the owners is to turn the current building, which is anywhere from 45 to 65 years old, depending on which portion of the building, plus the Tahoe City End, as well as commercial space there. They want to turn that into a new 5-star resort that includes a spa, 3 restaurants, a rooftop bar, event space, swimming pool. But as part of the plan, there was also runoff improvements, as usual nowadays when any type of redevelopment happens around the basin, there's always some kind of runoff improvements. But also, as per usual, there's a lot of mixed feelings on the issue, more so from locals when they had this meeting and discuss. And so as they're working through that environmental impact report, the project, it's not a done deal. It's just out there, and there's still a chance it doesn't go through at all, but there might be some other potential options that are hanging out there for it to happen. But this is really going to be a wait and see kind of story. But anytime you can get into new development conversations, that topic of workforce housing is bound to come up, which it did here. And it's a nice precursor because we're going to dive into that with our conversation with Julie. So stick around for that. And that's it,
Well,
Mike. A lot of storm stuff.
I love it. And you got to go check out the renderings of the Boatworks Mall development on the Sierra Sun or Tahoe Daily Tribune website to see what they have in store. I'm a proponent of that one personally. All right, the Tahoe Mountain Inn is a sponsor. Don't you just love that feeling when you nail it? Booking a room on vacation or work trips, that I can bring my dog with me, no hidden additional parking fee when you're in the checkout online, or a fireplace roaring when I arrive kind of feeling. Tahoe Mountain Inn's got you covered there, located in the heart of South Lake Tahoe. And the owner just went full Chip and Joanna Gaines on a remodel last year, 2023. So you can reap the benefits of all the new room smells and all the clean amenities there. Tahoe Mountain Inn, check them out. A great spot to post up in South Lake Tahoe. Now, for our guest, Julie Reagan, she is a seasoned Lake Tahoe executive. In 2022, the 15-member governing board of the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency, TRPA, selected Julie to lead the organization in place of Joanne Marchetta. And she's now charged with the environmental protection of the second deepest lake in the United States, our home right here, baby. Julie is a proven leader in environmental conservation, government affairs, and community engagement with decades of experience in the public and private sectors. She has held a leadership position at TRPA since 2003, Formed in 1969, though, TRPA was the first environmental interstate compact agency of its kind in the United States, sort of a trendsetter of sorts, you could say. Julie earned her master's degree in journalism from Temple University in Philadelphia and is a doctoral candidate in environmental science at the University of Nevada, Reno, focusing her research on the intersection of science and public policy, building on her experience at Lake Tahoe, balancing environmental preservation in a $5 billion tourist-based economy. $5 billion economy here we got. Yeah. Since she is the past co-chair of the Nationally Focused Network for Landscape Conservation and has contributed writings on destinations tourism to the global conservation of on over tourism. Originally from Delaware, Julie is celebrating three decades of community life at Tahoe, where she's been active in service organizations, including former chair of the Barton Hospital Foundation Board of Trustees. She enjoys skiing, mountain biking, hiking, and traveling with her family and dogs. This one is a treat here to have on tour. We got her patched in. Let's get right into it. And we're back, as promised, for the meat and potatoes of the podcast here. Julie Reagan is tapped in, and per usual, Mike Perrin here asking the less journalistic questions, as I sort of throw up the air quotes that you can't see, to loosen up the conversation a little bit and let the listeners in on your personality, Julie. And then I'll turn the stage over to Rob, who gets down to the nitty-gritty, like the esteemed publisher he is. So what, you know, my first one here, what is the most unique or remote destination that your role with the TRPA has taken you to, and why was that?
Well, sure. Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me to be on the program. Delighted to be here. You know, Julie Reagan, Tahoe Regional Planning Agency's executive director, been at the agency for about 20 years. And during that time, I mean, I have the greatest job in the world. I've been able to tell the Tahoe story around the country, but I think one of the most interesting and unique places I went to, it was a combination of representing Tahoe and TRPA at a conference in Cuba, in Havana and Vinales, Cuba. I also am pursuing my PhD in environmental science. So that was a combo through my school and research project. I was able to speak at a conference on sustainable tourism. Way back in 2017 and 2019, before COVID, before we even were talking about responsible tourism in Tahoe. So that was pretty exciting and pretty unique. And believe it or not, Cuba and Tahoe have a lot in common with the pressures on a beautiful, pristine ecosystem in a great part of their country down there. So it was pretty neat to get to go there.
Yeah, sort of. It feels like two decades ago, right? When you say 2017, but truly cutting edge for that topic. So
absolutely. Thanks
for sharing. In your personal opinion of sort of admiration, who is the most prestigious person you've had a chance to chat with in depth or sort of off the cuff? And I'm not talking just shook the president's hand, took a photo with him or anything like that, you know, because there might have happened. But, you know, one of those like more intimate conversations that you've had because of your experience and role at the TRPA.
You bet. Well, you said it. A highlight was getting to meet President Obama when he came to our summit in Tahoe in 2016. But that was pretty quick conversation. Mm-hmm, we did talk about Cuba, interestingly. However, I would have to say the best conversation that my role at TRPA has allowed me the opportunity to have is with Senator Dianne Feinstein. You know, she's a hero and a champion, a hero of mine and a champion for Lake Tahoe for decades, since she was a young girl coming to the lake. And then once she got into the Senate, she fought for us, you know, introduced the Lake Tahoe Restoration Act and has an incredible legacy. And so sadly, we lost her last year, but I had many opportunities to be with her, to talk to her when she would come to the lake, when we were back in Washington, D.C. And what an inspiring leader, and particularly a woman leader she has been and continues to just inspire through her legacy.
I had an inkling you might say that because I'm doing, you know, our prep for this interview. I saw Senator Feinstein's letter of recommendation on your application for executive director
Oh
role.
gosh, you did your homework. You know, that
Yeah.
actually meant the world to me that she was able to do that. When I have a rough day at TRPA, I sometimes will pull out that letter and look at it and go, okay, keep fighting the good fight here.
Well, that was among many other letters of recommendations too. So
Thank you.
you got a lot of backup there and well deserved for your role here as an executive director. My final question is, what's one policy or issue that in its infancy seemed really trivial, might not ever see the light of day, or I mean, you know what I mean, but ended up having sort of a monumental impact on the region or within the organization, you name it. I'll let you elaborate.
Gosh, there's so many, Mike. Just a lot of the work that TRPA has done over the years. You know, I'd say one of the most controversial probably was land coverage, and still is controversial today. Limiting how much development you can have on your private property because of water quality, and we're trying to restore the watershed and remove, what we call, you know, impervious surfaces. Think of like pavement, driveway. And so at the time when this was even talked about in the 1980s, it was pretty groundbreaking in the country. And we became a leader, a national leader in doing it. So I think at the time, folks in Tahoe and at TRPA might not have even seen the long reaching implications. And probably if it weren't for limiting the amount of development in the lake, we would have already lost the lake's beautiful clarity. We might have ourselves a big giant mud puddle out there if we didn't take that action, plus a number of other actions that TRPA and the whole basin partnership have done. And you know, now here we are, 40 some years later, we need to modernize it. And so that's part of what we're going to talk about today. We're in the process of updating and modernizing a lot of those groundbreaking policies.
And I'd say, you know, I personally felt it. I was having a shed built with Tough Shed and out of Sacramento. And, you know, that was trying to push the limits a little bit. I'll be fully transparent and see if I get some extra square footage. And they said, nope. Like, even the builders in Sacramento, they know, they're like, no, this is exactly what you have to do due to the TRPA, you know, standards. And I was like, wow, they are really in tune. So you've really, you know, penetrated all aspects of that with the land use. So
Well, thank you.
yeah, I mean, it's really an impactful one. I agree. So I'm going to turn it over to Rob and we'll talk about his questions.
Yeah, speaking, it's a nice segue, Mike, because you talk about impactful, and really what I want to dig into, you know, on our side of the things, Julie, is housing. I mean, you can, I don't want to say every single item or issue that surrounds the basin can probably be tied to housing in one way or another, but it's probably pretty close. And so, you know, in our side of things, you know, I want to dig into those. And, you know, my first question here is, starting this year, the TRPA working on a 3-year effort, and this is from a state of California grant to better integrate housing goals, and that's among a few other things, but integrated into key land use and water quality programs. And on that note, sticking on the housing side of things, what's the biggest item that's housing related that you're most excited about in the coming year?
Well, thanks for the question, Rob. I am so excited and energized for our board's leadership on housing and trying to make housing more affordable. I would say the biggest thing going right now is a huge decision that our board made in December of just last year, 2023, to amend our housing policies to drive a market toward more affordable construction of housing units and incentivizing more multifamily, duplexes, triplexes. And here's what's happening with that. You know, Tahoe has never been inexpensive to live. However, you know, I, like so many of my friends in Tahoe, were fortunate to buy homes, you know, 25, more than that, years ago in the basin. And the folks that are coming into the workforce now, they can't afford that. And then before COVID, the joke is we were Tahoe before COVID. We went to bed, we woke up after COVID as Aspen in terms of the pricing. You know, housing has tripled, you know, in the last decade or so. The cost of housing is at a tipping point. So our community is hurting, and people that are working here and supplying, you know, the jobs that we need to maintain a community are being priced out. And so I'm excited to tackle that, to modernize our housing policies. Our board is bullish to say, you know what? It's not okay for people to live in substandard housing, and we're doing something about it. And we can only do so much. It's going to take the whole community to work together on it, but we have a pretty important role to play. So I'm excited about the future, working within the caps of development that we have. You know, we have a regional plan that limits development. So no surprise, supply and demand. When you limit something, the prices will go up. But resort communities around the country and the world are experiencing the same thing, and they don't limit the development in the same way. So we actually have a double whammy and a big problem to solve, but we're attacking it by working with the community, and we have some pretty exciting progress on the horizon.
Yeah, and just Tahoe in general is not an easy place to navigate, given all of the active counties and everything else that's involved with it. So, you know, along those lines, and affordable housing, that's the big buzzword, or attainable, you know, depending on what side of the lake you're on. But I've also heard from a lot of folks that are in support of that moderate income properties too, and just people, you know, that I've talked to, decent paying jobs, but still don't have the opportunity to maybe purchase a house locally and still raise their family. So how do you balance that mid-level aspect with the, you know, quote unquote affordable side of things?
Absolutely. The way that we look at it are it's a spectrum. You know, we need housing at various levels, but we actually have done studies with community foundation partners to look at how many housing units were short at different income levels. So we're more than 5,000 units short of housing in the basin. That's basin wide, North, South Shore, Nevada, California. But we also have analyzed with our partners, you know, at the low level, which we call affordable, there's a level called moderate, and it's all based on income. And then there's also a category called achievable housing, and that's for our missing middle, it's called teachers, firefighters, nurses, small business owners, and professional career folks that still can't afford a house, but they make more money in the qualification process for those other levels of affordable and moderate. So we're attacking it at all levels. And we have passed through our board's leadership these new policies that are going to incentivize construction of those units in that affordable, moderate, and achievable category so that we can keep a local workforce. You know, we do not want to become Aspen, where we have to bus in everyone that works in our town. No offense to Aspen, it's a beautiful place, but Tahoe has never been that model, and we don't want it to be that model. We are at a tipping point, and we could lose the fabric of our community, because the working community is the backbone. You know, our people that work in the restaurants, serve drinks, work in hospitality, work in the hotels, work at ski resorts. This is the backbone of our community, and we're losing it. So it's pretty urgent, and it's not just at the lowest income level, although that's a huge challenge, but it's also at these other income levels. And so the policies that we're amending, and we have more work to do in the coming years, are going to attack it at all three of those levels. And looking at things like accessory dwelling units, you know, they might call them granny flats or mother-in-law units. There's some new policy direction from the state of California that we're implementing, and we have made it a lot easier to have one of those granny flats in the backyard. And we've been permitting those, and we've gotten the review times down to like 30, 40 days, which in Tahoe, that's pretty darn good for processing of permits. So we have a multi-tiered strategy to address exactly the problem that you've pointed out.
So that is like the most perfect segue that I can think of, because we recently conducted a poll on the North Shore around accessory dwelling units, or ADUs, and 80% of the people that took that poll, they were aware of what ADUs were, but only 30% of that 80% would even consider constructing an ADU on their property. And knowing ADUs are really probably just a small portion of the solution, what kind of participation would you say would make ADUs a success?
Well, we need more in general participation, and we need to up that number substantially. Like anything, we've got to get the word out. Even I'm glad to hear that people on the North Shore are aware of it. I think we've got work to do more on the South Shore to get the awareness up of what it is, the process that can be, you know, streamlined And work with our partners. You know, I have a lot of friends that would like to do it. It's still pretty difficult to go through the permitting. You know, there are fire code requirements for sprinklers and all that comes at a cost. And so I think we still just have to work together with all our partners to make it simple. I know the city of South Lake Tahoe is considering some new amendments and changes to have folks save money on architectural drawings. Just making that permitting process simpler, I think will add more activity, will get people more excited about it. But we have a lot more work to do. I mean, we still are, you know, in the dozens of accessory dwelling units in the basin, and we need, you know, we really need hundreds if you really look at it from the big picture. So it's going to take some more work. But in as I said, in all things, it takes time to build awareness, understanding, and find where those obstacles and barriers, you know, to implementation still are so that we can attack that. But that's what we do in Tahoe. We call it, you know, epic collaboration. It's not just regular communication, coordination. We reach across state lines. We reach across north to south, public, private. You know, we have 10 federal agencies that do business in Tahoe. We've got the Forest Service as 80% of the land. And even looking at public facilities, public land ownership, you know, we wouldn't have a Sugar Pine Village coming to the South Shore at the Y, which is the biggest affordable housing project in the basin's history, 250 units coming, some of them coming online this year. We wouldn't have that were it not for the state of California, the Tahoe Conservancy that donated the land. And so we're thinking strategically as what we call Team Tahoe, the Basin Partnership, to look at public lands and how can we have that be part of the solution? Because we have abundant public lands in the basin, and that really helps get the cost down to construct those affordable housing units.
Yeah, it's just moving parts galore when it comes to Tahoe and the basin. And Julie, you alluded to this earlier, and you know, a lot's really been made over those approved changes at the December board meeting. And, you know, the following lawsuit that was filed by the Mountain Area Preservation Foundation, or MAP, I know this is an active lawsuit and not knowing exactly how much you're able to say, probably not a lot, but did the lawsuit cause you to go back and reevaluate the approach and maybe find areas to improve what was approved? Or do you feel confident in what the proposed code changes were and that it'll do what you hope it will do in finding affordable housing?
Absolutely. We support the board's decision for the housing amendments. And I will tell you, you know, we are mounting a vigorous defense of that lawsuit. We know the actions that we took were right, and they are just one piece of the solution. We need to do more. You know, our board regional planning committee chair, whose name is Vince Hennigman, he's Governor Newsom's appointee to our board. He has said consistently for years, we need to go bold. We need to go bigger and bolder to make housing more affordable in the Tahoe Basin. So we are very confident that the courts will find on our side. You know, lawsuits take time. They take a lot of resources. It's really unfortunate that a Truckee-based organization that hasn't had any involvement in Tahoe, to be very honest, they've had very little involvement in Tahoe over the years. And I've been in Tahoe for 30 years. They came in at the last minute. We had a 2 to 3 year collaborative process with a working group, with community members and stakeholders for years. And they did not participate until the very last minute, and now we're in court. So that's what courts are for. You know, people have differences of opinion and the courts will sort it out. But it's really interesting that those folks that, you know, have the luxury and the good fortune to have their homes are saying, you know what, those that are less fortunate than us, you know, good luck to you. We're going to make it harder for you to enjoy the Tahoe dream as we are. And that is not acceptable. And our board doesn't think that's acceptable. So we are planning a really vigorous defense, and the courts will, you know, will have their say, and we'll see where it goes. But we are confident that we made the right decision. And there are some technical aspects of the decision that we're looking at, and, you know, looking at their litigation to see if there are any technical corrections we can make to clarify the rules. It's a very complicated Or code of ordinances, as you know, Tahoe is complicated. You indicated, Rob, the complexity just with the jurisdictional framework. So there might be some clarifications we can make, but we're evaluating all of that. It's still early days in the lawsuit.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So we'll keep paying attention to that and look forward to see what comes of it. But, you know, housing, it's a huge list, right? As far as all the things that that are tied to it. But if we put everything aside and we just try to boil it down, what do you feel is really that top barrier to finding solutions for affordable housing throughout the basin? What's congruent between everything around the basin, you know, counties in general? What do you think is really that top thing that's like, this is the thing we got to get over? This is the hump that we got to get over first before we can really do, you know, some good.
Well, I think it's education. I'll be very honest. I think people are confused because it is complicated. And those that don't understand what we're trying to do for housing maybe think we are abandoning our mission or letting the lake's clarity, you know, go by the wayside. And it's quite the opposite. These amendments are designed to improve water quality at the lake. There are stormwater improvements that can come along with improvements to housing and doing infill development. Infill development's basically fixing what you have. We don't have a lot of raw land in the basin left. We're almost at so-called build out. 90% of the land is publicly owned. So we actually have to fix the built environment that we have. And I think that's getting lost. So I would say one of the biggest barriers is just understanding and education that we are, number one, we're sticking within the development caps and the limits on development that we've had for decades. There is no change. So these units that we're talking about, trying to make them more affordable, they're going to be built one way or the other. They're already in the plans that we've analyzed. So do we want them to be large luxury homes or do we want them to be affordable? And so that's the question. And we want them to be affordable. We want to see more affordable units built. The market is going in the direction of large homes, and we want to help nudge that market to more affordable solutions. So I think that's a huge barrier, just understanding. So just doing things like this podcast is a great idea. We need to get the word out that we are staying true to our mission for the lake, but we also need to support our communities. And I think we just need to embrace the fact that Tahoe is a place where we want everybody to have access to housing. And it's not acceptable, the kind of conditions that people are living in. We took our board on a walking tour through Kings Beach before one of the votes for an affordable housing project there called Domus. And it's an apartment complex. And there's one that as you come into Kings Beach right on the highway, and there's several sprinkled throughout the community. And we actually had people open their homes. This is before the vote for this big project. And they had us look at the conditions that they were living in, you know, families sleeping in shifts because they only had one or two, maybe some of them one bedroom, some of them were studios, you know, eating from a hot pot, didn't have, you know, they had mold. You know, we have really terrible conditions that we are allowing our members of the community to live in. It's just, it's not acceptable. And we're trying to do something about it.
You know, Julie, you talked about it offline a little bit. Basically, like Tahoe's moment is now. And if you had your crystal ball and looked at, you know, challenges 5 years from now, do you see us better, worse, the same? You know, we're kind of at a point where it's kind of grim right now. But where do you see us going?
I think the challenges are enormous. I know that the challenges from climate change are probably going to get worse. But I think if we rally, we can actually do something about it. I firmly believe we're at a tipping point, and if we do wait to act on some of these policy improvements, we could lose our chance. So we have a window, and we need to come together as a community. So I do believe affordable housing pressures will grow. It's just simple math, you know, as the economy in the Bay Area goes. Think Silicon Valley, think wealth in the Bay Area. So too are the challenges of our housing price points. People in the Bay Area have a lot more wealth than we do here in the basin, and they will buy homes that they may do telecommuting. They may work remotely. They may use it as a second home. And there are lots of challenges around all of that. And our policy shifts aren't going to solve them all, but certainly if we act now, I really believe that we can make a dent in attacking this problem. So there's There are things that are going to be out of our control. We can't control the temperature. When it's a 100-degree day in Sacramento versus like a 65 normal day in Sacramento, we know that traffic over Echo Summit doubles. People want to escape the heat. We're a climate refuge. And what does that mean? Well, sure, we love having visitors that can support our visitor-based economy, tourist-based economy, but that brings more traffic congestion, and that makes our roads more congested. That can lead to safety problems, you know. And then as housing gets more expensive, our workforce has to join in that commute. So we could reduce a lot of the impacts from commuting, from the traffic and air quality and vehicle miles traveled, if we could just make some more affordable housing happen here in Tahoe.
Great. And, you know, real quick before we get ready to sign off here, what would you say the best way for someone to get involved in housing issues across the region?
Well, I think that's the key. I would love to see more people get involved. And if you don't have time to go to a meeting and make a public comment, you can email them. Go to trpa.gov/housing. And again, that's trpa.gov/housing. And read up on what's going on. Send in a comment to our governing board. You don't have to attend a public meeting to do that. There are working groups. There are community support areas in the South Shore and the North Shore, different members of the community through the chamber and other family resource councils and other groups on the North Shore that are really active in this space, the Tahoe Prosperity Center, just to name a few. Just get involved. Just educate yourself. And then talk to your neighbors and say, you know what? There are people in this town that are working to make housing more affordable. And let's unify and keep the work going. Because there's a whole new phase. Yep. We're calling it phase 3 of the affordable housing work that's just kicking off. And so we've got a couple more years in front of us to even deliver more solutions that improve equity in housing and making housing more affordable. So we want the community to be a part of it.
Great. Well, one last minute here, before we sign off, if you want to plug anything else or add any more information for the listeners out there.
I just really want to thank everyone in our town who's sticking with Tahoe. It's easy, you know, to take off when the going gets tough, but I really want to thank our community for the hard work to keep our community safe, to keep the Tahoe open during extreme weather last winter, nearly crippled everyone in town, and we stuck through it. We went through the Caldor fire together. Shoot, even going back to the Angora wildfire, you know, more than 15 years ago. You know, I just want to give a shout out to all the people that keep the lights on, keep the roads clear, keep the restaurants open, the grocery stores, all the things that are the heartbeat of town. And we take notice of that at TRPA. We're part of this community too. The majority of our staff live right here in Tahoe, and we're grateful for the opportunity to be part of the community. So keep it up, stay strong, and get involved.
Absolutely. And you have no easy task over there at the TRPA to try to keep all these items straight. But again, Julia, I just want to say thank you for your time. Thank you for hopping on here with me and Mike. And for Mike Perrin, Rob Galloway, thanks again for listening to the Tahoe Tap. And we will see you again in a couple weeks. Take care, everybody.